you. A little update. We're going to be having Midrash class and this time slot for the next 2 weeks. So this Monday, Thursday, next Monday, Thursday. We're still in the process of deciding what's going to be in the slot following that. So stay tuned for emails from Hadar, as always. Okay, let's start diving in. Elise, could you screen share the... Yes, thank you. There's the Google Doc, and we'll also be in screen share. Okay, we are in Parshat Naso this week. A little bit about the moment where we're diving in the text. We are diving in to the moment of the dedication of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, and we're specifically diving in to the moment where all of the chieftains are bringing their various offerings. And the Midrash is going to notice some similarities between our text and the text at the very beginning of the Torah, at the very beginning of Bereshit. And we'll take a look at what some of the key words are that set off that connection. Let's start with the first source from our parsha. V'hi b'yom kalot Moshe lahakim et ha-mishkan, v'yimshach oto v'yekadesh oto v'et kol kelav, v'et ha-mizbech v'et kol kelav, v'yimshachem v'yekadesh otam. On that day, Moses finished setting up the tabernacle. He anointed and consecrated it and all its furnishings, as well as the altar and its utensils. When he had anointed and consecrated them, and the text goes through some details until we get to the first offering of the chieftains. V'hiya makriv b'yom harishon et korbano Nachshon ben Aminadav l'mate Yehuda. The one who presented his offering on the first day was Nachshon, son of Aminadav of the tribe of Yehuda. So let's just take a moment to take a look at this text. What are some keywords that might set off Midrashic alarm bells to link this text to Bereshit? And specifically the creation story in Bereshit. You can use the chat to answer. Think Friday night Kiddush for those of you who, for whom that's your most frequent link to Bereshit language. V'yekadesh oto, great. V'yehi b'yom, Francine Shraga, said. So just going to say names. Francine Shraga, Vayhi Bayom. Nancy Kaplan said, Vayekadesh Oto. Great. There's one more that's a little tricky here because it's, yes, Melinda Zama got it, which is kalot, which is the same root as the Hebrew word Vayechulu, as in where many of us start Kiddush on Friday night, Vayechulu Hashemayim Baharetz Vachotz Va'am. Where God actually finishes the creation. There are actually, this actually happens in the various times where we see the Mishkan being built. We have to remember that this is a story that we have different iterations of in the Torah, and these keywords actually appear also in Shemot when the Torah is finished being built. I believe that the biblical scholar Nahum Sorna wrote quite a bit about this, if anyone's particularly interested. So let's just take a look at the verses from Bereshit before we dive in to the Midrash itself. Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz, when God began to create heaven and earth, v'ha'aretz hayta tohu v'vohu v'choshech al pnei tahom v'ruch Elokim merachevet al pnei hamayim. Vayomer Elokim yihi or vayihi or vayar Elokim et ha'or ki tov vayavdel Elokim ben ha'or ben ha'choshech. In some versions of the building of the Mishkan, the root vayavdel also plays an important role before or right after instructions for the Mishkan are given. But the part that I really want us to pay attention to is coming up right now. V'ekra Elokim la'or yom v'lachoshech kara laila, v'hi erev v'hi boker yom echad. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening, and there was morning, day one. Our Mishkan is going to pick up and be very curious about this language of yom echad. what might have you expected the Torah to use Embreshit instead of Yom Echad? Yes, Melinda Zalma and Danielle Winter, you might have expected the Midrash to use the word Yom Rishon. So the Midrash is going to pick up and be very curious about the language of Yom Rishon instead of Yom Echad, and draw a connection to our Pasuk here where we actually do say Yom Rishon. And Francine Shraga is already pointing us in the right direction by pointing to the Mishkan as recreation of the world. Our Midrash is actually going to play with that in a slightly different way by focusing on the question, why have a Mishkan at all? What does God want with a Mishkan? And as we dive into the Midrash, if you want to take the chance to answer that question for yourself over the chat, why have a Mishkan? What is the point of the Mishkan? We'll see how our intuitions might line up or might differ from those of the Midrash. Okay, let's keep going. We'll dive right in. This again is from Bamidbar Rabbah and focusing on Bayom HaRishon in our text from Parshat Nesum. On the first day, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Abba said, what does it mean when it says on the first day? That from the first day that the Holy One, blessed be He, created the world, He desired to dwell with His creations in the lower realms. So, we're actually being brought back to the very first moment of creation here. And the Midrash is saying, you want to understand what's going on the first day of the dedication of the Mishkan? You actually have to go back to the first day, the first moment when God created the world, and understand what God's desire was that whole time. The whole time God desired to dwell in the lower realms on earth with God's creations. And I want to draw our attention to the language used for desire here, nitaveh. It actually has a very strong connotation. It is the root that's sometimes used for sexual desire. It's strong, longing, overwhelming. Very deeply emotional language, I would say. Let's keep going. See how the first day is described in the creation of the world. And there was evening and there was morning, day one. And just to remind us, in the text in Bereshit that says Yom Echad, it does not say the first day, it does not say Yom Rishon, but rather day one. So we're trying to puzzle out, why does it say Yom Echad rather than Yom Rishon? And as it says day one, it ought to continue by saying day two, day three. And let's just look in the Hebrew also here. So it says Yom Echad, Yom Rishon Eino Omer, it does not say the first day, Ela Yom Echad. But instead, what does the text actually say? It doesn't go from Yom Echad to Yom Shnayim, Yom Shlosha. It goes to Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi. So we're trying to puzzle out. There's something unique about the first day that doesn't seem to of creation, that doesn't seem to line up with the other days of creation. Why is the numbering given for it in a different form? I'm in line three now. Rather, why does it say day one? Because even when God was still one, alone in creation, He desired to dwell with His creations in the lower realms. So here, the text is picking up on the word echad, and saying, you know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of the word yachid, which comes from the same root. And it's pointing to, actually, you know what was one at that point? God. And actually, instead of being the praise that we usually think of for God, right? We usually think of the fact that God is unique, God is singular, as the ultimate sort of way of praising God. This is pointing to, I would say, actually profound loneliness on God's part. And actually implying to us, you know why God creates the world to begin with? Because God didn't want to be alone. Because God wanted to dwell with God's creations. And more than that, God actually wanted to dwell on earth with God's creations. And that desire, as we saw in the previous line, only really gets its fulfillment at the moment of the erecting of the Mishkan. Let's keep going. I'm just checking the chat now. Francine Shaga, he, God, was lonely. Yeah, we often think of loneliness in Breshit as applying to Adam before the creation of Chava, but the Midrash is saying, no, it's not good to be alone. That seems to have also applied to God, God's self. Sharon Perlman, related to God is one in the Shema, that's where my intuition takes me. I'm not sure if I'm reading too much into the Midrash there when I think of the contrast between those two. Okay, let's keep going. So we are still in line three, and we have, rather, why does it say that God was one, that it was day one? Because even when God was still one, alone in creation, God desired to dwell with his creations in the lower regions. He did not do this at that moment. Rather, when the Mishkan was erected and the Holy One, blessed be he, caused his presence to dwell there, and the chieftains came to offer their offerings, the Holy One, blessed be he, said, let it be written that on this day the world was created. So when we're looking at the language in our text in Nasun, it says Yom Rishon. The Midrash is saying that God is actually pointing to that day and saying, this is the real Yom Rishon. This is the real first day of creation. On that other first day of creation, Yom Echad, it was incomplete, and it was the beginning of an incomplete creation. This is the real Yom Rishon. This is the real first day of creation. Creation as I willed it, as I wished for it, as I would say longed for it, is actually happening here. I want to encourage us at this moment to take a moment and think for ourselves, how do we usually think about God's desire in creating the Mishkan? God's desire in having the Jewish people create the Mishkan. What do we usually think of? Why does God want the Mishkan to be created? And how does it compare and contrast to what this Midrash is pointing out? Paul and Leah Jenner said, that's why God formed the Leviathan to sport with. That is one of my favorite psukim, and that's what I always think of. I love that image. Nancy Kaplan said, usually we think of the Mishkan as the people need it. Sharon Perlman, God wants to dwell in our midst. Elizabeth Leggett says, to create order and harmony in the world. So I want to pick up on a few strands. Sharon Perlman is very much siding with our Midrash. God wants to dwell among us. It's God's longing. Nancy Kaplan's explanation that the people needed it is often how I experience the pshat of the Midbar. God is doing us this special favor. God is doing something for us, also, both for our protection, but also in order to grant us access to God. And here the Midrash is saying, no, 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 it is to grant God access to you. I also want to highlight Elizabeth Leggett, who says, to create order and harmony in the world, which also very much echoes Breshit language, right? It's all about order, it's all about division, it is all about things being where they belong. Melinda Zamet, for us to draw near to God to have a place for forgiveness. So very much picking up on the Yom Kippur aspect of the Mishkan and how can we be in relationship with God given that we are flawed human beings. And Francine Shaga says, God contains self after failure of the golden calf. So the reading in which the Mishkan is actually a concession to the human need for some sort of representation of God. And this is the classic debate about whether Shemot is written in chronological order or out of chronological order. Sharon Perlman said, very Heschel, God in search of man, symbiosis in the relationship. Yes, and I was shocked when I saw this Midrash and realized, oh, this is what that Midrash was trying to say. Let's jump back into the text. Another interpretation, on the first day. It does not say on the day that the Mishkan was erected. Rather, it says on the first day. What does it mean by first? First, according to the creation of the world. This teaches us that it was the first day of the week. So not only is the first day a sort of redoing of creation, it is actually lining up with the days of creation. It is actually in our circles of time, if you will. The first day is happening on the first day. And let's see what the Midrash does with that. This means that 10 crowns were given on that day. The first day, according to the order of creation, meaning it was on what we in America would call a Sunday. First for the kehuna, meaning this was the first day that being a Kohen really mattered in when it comes to matters of the Mishkan. First for the chieftains, we see here the Nisi'im really coming into their power as they bring the dedications. First for the divine presence, as it says, and you shall make me a sanctuary and I shall dwell within it. Vasuli Mishkan v'shachanti betocham. First for the temple service. First for the priestly blessing, which comes almost immediately before this. Sivarachacha Hashem v'yishmeacha. First for the new moons. First for the prohibition against the high places, the bamot, where people used to offer sacrifices and now are now forbidden to. First for the prohibition against eating kodshim, meaning special parts of the korbanot that people are forbidden to eat. First for the descent of the fire, as it says, and a fire came out before God and devoured what was on the altar. So let's just take a moment to look at these 10 crowns. These are serving two purposes, I think. First, the Midrash is actually bringing us into, this isn't just a memory of creation. This isn't just a fulfillment of creation, as in the one dangling thread that was left. We actually, the Midrash is saying, have to take seriously the idea that there are actually new things created on this day, new realities created on this day in the form of these laws. And in that way, creation is not actually complete until these things also come into creation. These things, meaning God dwelling among us, these things, meaning the kehuna, these things, meaning God coming and devouring the sacrifices, that's a sort of fulfillment of creation in and of itself. But there is also a link to a Midrashic idea about creation, specifically in the number 10, the 10 crowns. Was anyone doing Perkei Avot during this last cycle before Shavuot? I'm seeing some nods. So you might remember, here, let's scroll down. There is a place in Perkei Avot where it actually insists that the world was created with 10 utterances. If you go and count the number of times that it says Vayomer, and there are different ways of counting this in the text of Bereshit, which I'm not going to get into now because I'm not even sure I could count to 10 before 9 in the morning, to be completely honest with you. But the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot says God created the world with 10 utterances. And why did God create the world with 10 utterances? When God could have easily created it with one? And the answer that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot says, to punish evildoers for destroying a world that was created with that many utterances and to reward righteous people who uphold a world that was created with that many utterances. So in this moment, the Midrash is actually bringing us back there. The Midrash is actually bringing us into this idea. The Mishkan is not simply a single entity, just like the world is not a single entity. It's almost facile to think of the world as a single unit, as something that is created all in one go instead of through God's concerted and repeated effort. And that's also part of what the Midrash is saying is going on in the Mishkan. It is a single unit that is made of many parts. And it is a single unit that is that much more beautiful for being made of many parts. Let's scroll back up for a moment so that we can just spend a little bit more time thinking about this idea of the lonely God who's waiting for all those years for this moment to be in relationship with human beings, and specifically to dwell in the lower realms with God's creation. And there are two questions that I want to throw out here as we wrap up. And please use the chat for this. The first question I want to ask is, how does this idea line up with how you usually think of God in relation to both creation and the Mishkan? Meaning, usually, when you read the story of creation, or when you say Kiddush on Friday night, what image of God do you usually have? And how does this midrash about the lonely God play with it or interact with it? That's question one. And question two is, what are we left with at the end when we know there no longer is a Mishkan, there no longer is a temple? What are we left with at the end when we know that actually that longing of God is left unfulfilled? What do we do with that emotionally? What feeling does that create? And what sort of a feeling does it create specifically for us towards God? So again, just to reiterate those two questions, one, how does this image of God in the Midrash interact with your usual understanding of the God of creation? And two, what are we left feeling at the end when we know that this longing of God's is no longer fulfilled? And you can use the chat to answer. Paul and Leia Jenner said, maybe God comes to Shul to talk to Schwartz. I'm not even going to bother unpacking the classic joke there. Or I will. What, Schwartz comes to Shul to daven, I come to Shul to talk to Schwartz. But I think there's actually something very profound there. This midrash is actually saying your usual ideas of worship and what goes into worship, think more human. Just like you go for companionship, maybe God goes for companionship also. And that has never been more poignant to me than during these times, obviously. And I'm very moved by the idea of a God who also longs for that and needs that. Francine Straga, this depicts a more relational, intimate God with us in our despair diaspora. Yes, very much. Rabbi Arlene Berger, transition to Mikdash Ma'at within each of us. So enhances personal relationship with God. I love that. Melinda Zalma, if God is searching for us, we should look for opportunities to meet God. I love that. And also, not just because we need God in some way, but because God is lonely and we should look for lonely people. Rebecca Thrope, the world is incomplete, is lacking a fullness and completeness. Yes. Which feels particularly poignant this particular week and this particular morning. M.E., God is with us in our homes on Shabbat and with us through us. That's beautiful. Sharon Perlman, message for us, take things one at a time. God needed stages to create the world. We are therefore more like God when we understand that anything worth having takes time. That's lovely. And Nancy Kaplan, this is actually the perfect place to close out, so we will do that. Zoom as a metaphor for the Mishkan. And I just want to unpack that a little. People who are, I know that I certainly am, longing for connection, coming for a set amount of time to these spaces where we're actually able to come together. And the word communion is very Catholic in some ways, but that's really what we're doing here in the best way. We're having some sort of communion. And I love the idea that that is actually a recreation in some way of what the Mishkan was going for. Okay, everyone, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Again, if there's anything that you want to let me know, adler@hadara.org. And I will see you all on Thursday morning. Thank you so much.